Have you ever had an argument with scales? Not fish scales, weight scales. Have you ever stared at the number and refuted it? Hell no, you can't be correct. You're inaccurate. You're overweighing me. I'm not that heavy. You're wrong. But the scales never reply. They remain mute. They don't defend themselves. It does no good to contend with scales about your weight. My brother Jonathan used to be an on-air disc jockey at a country music station, and he was pretty heavy, and he would attract weight loss sponsors to have contests with his fellow DJs. You know, bragging about the 40 pounds on this or that diet program, but in the meantime gaining back 24. Bathroom scales are impervious to objections. So's the radar gun. This can't be true, officer. I wasn't speeding. The radar gun says otherwise. Growl. Case closed. No rebuttal allowed. It's hard to deny the truth when it stares you right in your face. In Jacob's case, God gave him a face full of facts in the distant land of Haran. You'll find his 20-year sojourn there in the Bible, one of the most curious and entertaining and fascinating stories. Can a man marry one woman all the while thinking he was marrying somebody else? Would a swindler ever be out-swindled by another swindler? Genesis chapter 29 offers some answers. Verse 1. So Jacob went on his journey. Vine's Expository Bible says Jacob thought he was on his way to Haran. And in reality, he was on his way to the school of hard knocks. Jacob's uncle Laban was the dean and professor of every course in this school. God would use Laban to get Jacob where he needed to be. But before we follow Jacob to Haran, keep in mind that Jacob was a player in heaven's greatest promise, the deliverance of Jesus to this earth. Two generations earlier, God had spoken to Abraham, Jacob's grandfather, and promised in so many words, I'm going to do something about the misery, the death, the brokenness of this world, and I'm going to do it through you and your descendants. And one of those descendants was Jacob. From the top of Jacob's ladder, God had promised, in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Yet Jacob's rap sheet included such words as trickster and cheater and deceiver and liar. His spiritual life had more ups and downs than the Wrangell Mountains. But God kept him on the team. God used the man in spite of the man. Odd, I know. Jacob's probably seemed more at home in a gambling casino than in a church sanctuary. He's a bit of a mess, this guy. And aren't we all? Like him, our spiritual walk follows a crooked path. Our cheese keeps falling off our cracker, and our bad habits scuttle our good intentions. And we wondered, does God have a place for us? The answer through Jacob is yes. Our failures are great, but God's grace is greater. He uses flawed folks. He doesn't cast us out when we deserve it. He does, however, let us reap what we sow. And Scripture waves away a warning flag, often with no small amount of flair. The wicked are trapped by their own deeds, Psalm 9:16. Cruel people bring trouble on themselves, Proverbs 11:17. The unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity, Proverbs 11:3. The wicked are brought down by their own wickedness, Proverbs 11:5. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your deeds will return upon your own head, Obadiah 1:15. The nations have fallen into the pit that they dug. Their feet are caught in the nets they had, Psalm 9:15. And the list of such advisements goes on and on. And the fact is that we reap what we sow is no small matter in Scripture. Evil rebounds, but so does good. Forgive, and you will be forgiven, Luke 6:37. Well-spoken words bring satisfaction. Well-done work has its own reward, Proverbs 12:14. Kind people do themselves a favor, Proverbs 11:17. Whoever gives to others will get richer. Those who help others will themselves be helped, Proverbs 11:25. And Jesus summed up this bounce back principle when he said, with the measure you use, it will be measured to you, Matthew 7:2. Do you want God to dispense mercy upon you with a bucket? Then use a bucket as you dispense mercy on others. Would you want him to use a teaspoon? Then, well, you get the point. I'm not sure Jacob did, though. To help him learn it, God took Jacob to the land of Laban, the region known as Haran. Rebekah, his mother, had commissioned his journey. Her plan was simple. Send Jacob to a safe place where he could stay with his brother Laban while Esau's anger subdued. And who knows? While there, he might even find a nice young girl to marry. And Jacob thought he was going to Haran to meet his uncle, perhaps marry a wife. God, however, sent Jacob to Haran so Jacob could step on the scales. It was time to read the radar gun. It was time for Jacob to face the facts about Jacob. He had a few blind spots. So he traveled east across the Jordan River, north toward Damascus, east to Tadmor, and then a sharp north over the Euphrates River and through the Fertile Crescent into modern-day Turkey. The first thing Jacob saw in Haran was a water well. A stone plugged the mouth of it to prevent pollution and theft, and three shepherds were standing near the well. Jacob asked if they knew a man named Laban. They said they did. Genesis 29, beginning at verse 9. While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherd. And when Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of his uncle Laban, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. Max Lucado comments, what a made-for-movie moment. I see Rachel with dark hair that was gathered at the nape of her neck by a scarlet string. Her eyes were the color of chocolate, shaped like almonds. Her chin had a slight cleft. Her mouth, a shy smile. She shepherded her flock with a willow branch. She was a portrait of charm, this Rachel. Like Lord Byron's poem describes, she walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes. She was a knockout. And Jacob fell head over heels. One side of her, and he ripped open his robe, revealing his Superman S on his chest. He flexed his muscles and he pressed his shoulder against that heavy stone and gave it a heave, and the rock gave way. And Jacob did what the three others had yet to do. He then did what no one had imagined he would do. He kissed Rachel and broke into tears. Commentaries describe this kiss as a respected and expected cultural gesture. A slight peck on the cheek. Max comments, "Really? I see passion. I see Jacob cupping her face in his hands and kissing her like it was her wedding day. He then wept for her beauty, for the end of his pilgrimage, at the thought that he, the heel grabber, would meet such a queen, maybe all of the above." According to the JPS Torah commentary, the name Rachel means ewe, E-W-E, as in lamb. The moment Jacob saw her, he said, "I want you." He was in love. One of the few romantic marriages in all of the Old Testament. Rachel ran and fetched her father Laban. You got to prepare yourself for this guy. He was a slick one. He part Bernie Madoff and part P.T. Barnum, Ponzi Meister, circus promoter. He could at once put his arm around your shoulder and put his other hand on your wallet. He wore his silk shirt unbuttoned clear down to the navel and a gold chain around his neck, gold rings on each pinky. His hair was colored with grocery store hair dye that didn't match his sideburns. He gave Jacob a squeeze. "Ha! Oh, Rebecca's boy! You will come to my tent. You will live in my house. You will want nothing for as long as you live here." Jacob went to work for Laban. And a month later, after tending his flocks, he requested permission to marry Rachel. The typical bride price was 30 to 40 shekels. And the typical wage for a shepherd annually was 10 shekels a year. So Jacob most likely expected to work about 3 or 4 years for Rachel's hand in marriage. Boy, was he in for a surprise. Max imagines the conversation sort of went something like this. "What would you take in exchange for the hand of your daughter?" Laban placed his hand over his heart. "I could never give up my precious Rachel. I'll work for you." "Oh, I could never accept labor from my sister's son. I'll tend your flocks for a year." "Oh, but Rachel is my special daughter. I'll serve for 3 years." "But Rachel is such a beauty." Jacob, who had moved the stone to impress Rachel, will now move heaven and earth to win Rachel's hand and marry her. 4 years. Back and forth they volleyed, and Jacob agreed to work 7 years, double the expected dowry for only room and board. Remember, this was Jacob. He was the grandson of the richest man in the promised land, and he was working for free. Either Rachel was drop-dead gorgeous, or greedy Laban could talk birds out of trees. I suspect that both were the case. Some of the Bible's most romantic language and poetic was used to describe the romance between Jacob and Rachel. Genesis 29, verse 20. "So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her." Warren Wiersbe. "It has been well said that happiness consists of having someone to love, something to do, something to look forward to." Jacob had all three. All would have gone well had Laban been not such a backroom dealer. Rachel had an older sister named Leah, who was still single. Scripture's a bit cryptic as about her appearance. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Verse 17. Delicate means soft. One commentary says weak. Leah's eyes lacked the fire and sparkle that was in Rachel's. A reflection on her appearance? Well, it seems to be the case. One commentary discloses, quote, "While Leah is not without striking features, she pales in comparison to Rachel's overall beauty. What we can say with certainty is that Rachel was heading to the wedding altar, but her big sister Leah was not. Laban, however, had other plans." I don't know how to say switcheroo in Hebrew, but he also pulled off the biggest one in the Bible. The day of the wedding finally arrived. 7 years of labor were completed. And Laban invited everyone to come. The brickmakers, the goatherds, the shepherds, the grain-growing farmers, the camel-riding merchants. Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Verse 23. The word for feast here means drinking fest. Wine flowed like water. Everybody drank and danced. There was hand clapping, music making, joke telling, back slapping, drum beating, music eating, feet kicking, sandal stomping. And just when the bibulous bunch thought they couldn't drink anymore, they did just that. The women prepared the bridal tent. They covered the ground with carpets and perfumed the air with incense and placed lamps very dimly lit on the table. As the sun set, the stage was set for the magic moment. Rising branches became dancing silhouettes in the circle of the moonlight. Stars sat like diamonds on the velvet night sky. Laban fetched the heavily veiled bride and led her to the tent. She'd been out of sight all day. By the time it was time for Jacob to consummate his marriage, he was so drunk he could scarcely see what he was doing. At least that's the best way to explain how he fell for Laban's chicanery. The next morning, as the fog cleared from his head and the wine flushed out of his system, he rolled over in bed, expecting to see his lovely Rachel, and wow, was he surprised. Warren Wiersbe observed, "Leah seems to be a willing accomplice, happy to get a hard-working husband like Jacob, who would inherit Isaac's wealth and enjoy the covenant blessings of Abraham. Certainly she knew that Rachel would be part of the bargain, but she was willing to risk whatever problems might ensue. Leah may have even borrowed some of her sister's garments and even learned to imitate some of her personal mannerisms. If so, she was treating Jacob just the way he had treated his father when he pretended to be Esau. The way we treat others often feels different when it happens to us." Well, morning came, verse 25. There was Leah in the marriage bed. And as Barney says, surprise, surprise. Jacob confronted Laban. "What have you done to me? Didn't I work all this time for the hand of Leah, of Rachel? Why did you cheat me?" Remember the phrase, "a taste of your own medicine"? Well, Jacob was handed a spoonful. One, first, Jacob, who fooled his near blind father, Isaac, in a tent, was fooled in a tent when he was blind on wine, blinded by the night, blinded by lust, blindly in love. Second, Jacob, who by the most calculating stealth ways stole what could not be returned. He was tricked into a marriage that could not be undone. Third, Jacob, who begrudged and resisted the tradition of firstborn going first, fell victim to Laban's explanation that it was wrong to give the younger before the firstborn, verse 26. And Jacob, who complained to Laban, "Why did you cheat me?" used the same word that Esau used. "Jacob has cheated me two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken my blessing." Confident that Jacob would agree, Laban offered to let Jacob marry Rachel as well. The condition? 7 more years of labor. Verse 28 is as terse as Jacob's expression must have been. Jacob agreed. He finished the 7-day wedding with Leah and then married Rachel. Something tells me the second party was a little more subdued than the first. The chapter concludes with Jacob having sister wives. One wanted, one not. 7 more years of work to fulfill, and plenty of time to ponder a fundamental recurring truth that we find in Scripture. Galatians 6:7 reads, "You cannot cheat God. People harvest only what they plant." Jacob planted seeds of deceit, so he harvested a crop of deceit. He fooled Esau, he fooled Isaac, but he was fooled by Laban. Jacob got Jacobed. It'd be nice to say that he learned his lesson. What a delight would be to hear, you know, Jacob had an aha moment. He turned his life around for the better. He realized that he had spent his years dealing from the bottom of the deck and made a life change. And henceforth, he treated every person with respect. He honored God with reverence. Haran had its intended impact on Jacob. But alas, that would be fiction. Jacob remained stiff, unresponsive. Slow learner this patriarch is. God sent him multiple messages. Some came in the form of blessings, a safe arrival in Haran, a stunning visage named Rachel, the ability to do the work of 3 men and move the rock from the well, 7 years of service that felt more like a delight than a duty. Could Jacob not have interpreted these gifts as indications that God was with him? Others signals came in the form of burdens. His encounter with Laban the louse, the wedding night swap, 7 more years of hard work. At any point, Jacob could have, should have, looked up. "Are you trying to tell me something, God?" God gave him plenty of opportunities to learn his lesson and change his ways. He never did. Incredible. And even more incredible, God never gave up on him. He never turned away. He never threw up his hands and quit. Grace, grace, grace. And you? Perhaps you find yourself far from home, far from hope, or far from the life you'd hoped to find, or you're working hard on an advanced degree from the School of Hard Knocks. Graduation seems forever away. If that describes you, before you blame Laban or scowl at Leah, take a long look in the mirror and let's let Jacob's story be a warning to each of us. We reap what we sow. What seeds are you sowing? Just as the seeds of deceit reaped a harvest of deception, seeds of truth give way to a bountiful barn full of life. consequences that have compound interest. You determine the quality of tomorrow by the seeds that you sow today. Jacob's story didn't have to be routed through Haran. Marriage to the wrong sister was not mandated. 14 years of hard labor was not a requirement to be a patriarch. He could have completed God's plan and led a much more peaceful life. But when we sow to the wind, we reap a whirlwind. Hosea 8:7. Or as another wise man stated, quote, when you're kind to others, you help yourself. When you're cruel to others, you hurt yourself. Bad work gets paid with a bad check. Good work gets solid pay. Proverbs 11:17-18. Did Jacob learn his lesson? Well, we'll need to be reading about the rest of his life to find a definitive answer. There is one redeeming detail in this honeymoon heist that needs to be mentioned. You remember Leah, the older sister, the one with the delicate eyes, the soft eyes. Through her, God's plans were forwarded. She gave birth to a son named Judah. Among her descendants were a shepherd boy of Bethlehem named David and a carpenter from Nazareth named Jesus. Yes, Leah, unchosen by Jacob, was chosen by God to be a mother in the bloodline of the King of Kings. Oh, the portraits of grace continue. Selah.